Okay, so I forgot to tell Ben that I was calling. I told him it would be at the normal time, but I said that I might be late, and he said, "Well, just keep me informed of what's happening." And I forgot to say anything to him. I'm just calling him.
Hey, Paul Goody.
So, hey, Ben Lawrence, how's it going?
Good, how are you?
Good. I was just commenting to the people that I may not have given you enough time to get ready. Because I remembered you said, keep me informed, and then I just called you
Right.
instead of
Well,
saying anything.
you are calling me exactly right on time, and fortunately, I was prepared.
All right. Ben Lawrence, we've maybe talked about this before. Were you ever in the Boy Scouts?
I was in the Boy Scouts.
How, what, to what level did you get to?
I stopped being in the Boy Scouts the day I got my Weeblos badge, which is sort of like the bridge between Cub Scouts and Boy Scouts.
Ah, so you were in the system, but you weren't actually in the boys part. You were
I
a Cub
never,
Scout.
yeah, I never made it out of the, I never made it to the boys level. I only made it past the Cubs level.
I believe that I want to say that's what happened with my dad too. I think he was a Cub Scout, not a Boy Scout. I'll have to ask for everybody who cares. This is when I say my dad, I mean George Goody, my adopted father. You have to let people know.
I can't remember how many years I was in the Cub Scouts, but I was done by the time I hit the sixth grade. And after that, it was just a lot of like camping and outdoorsy things and the like, and I was basically not interested in doing any of that. So I told my parents, yeah, once I reach this level, I'm done. And they were like, all right. We don't
Hey,
need to
I
buy
think
you any
that's
more Cubs, Boy Scouts outfits anymore.
exactly. No more fundraising stuff.
Exactly.
Yeah, I don't like fundraising. I'm gonna get into fringe theater. I was thinking about this. I've been reading a lot about different scams that people pull on people. And one of them is called, I believe it's called a jam auction.
A jam auction.
You'll have to look it up. But I was thinking it would actually be a pretty great way to fundraise for a theater. Although some people might get mad about it. Because in fringe theater stuff, people show up expecting that they're going to pay money. Right? That's like part of the thing. I'm going to give money, and some people give very generously. For example, I remember at one point in time, there was a fundraiser, and this is more than one fundraiser. We would say that there's an opportunity to bribe the judges, and people used to bribe judges like very extravagantly, like times that they wouldn't necessarily even need to, just as an excuse to give the theater more money. It was great.
If you're throwing an auction or a fundraiser for a nonprofit, you should not make it difficult for people to give you money. Make it as easy as
Exactly.
possible.
And so the idea of the jam auction is, and I think I've got this right, but I'm not exactly positive. The idea is that you're going to eventually start getting tokens for big ticket items, but you get tokens for small items first. And the way it works is that they you get a prize, right? And you give the oh, Ben, I'm already falling into this trap.
What's that?
Jennifer has already experienced this with me when I was trying to explain how shortchanging works. When I start describing how cons work, I do it wrong. And people end up getting more confused, which is great if you're actually conning someone, but bad if you're trying to explain it. But I believe the way it works is that you give the people their, so the people have gotten something, right? You give them their money back. And now they've gotten this free item and they have their money, right? And before you give them their money back, they're like, are you satisfied with what you've got? And they say, yeah. And then you give them their money back anyway, even though they say they're satisfied. until the very end where they've given a lot of money and they receive a pretty big item, but not an item that's worth as much as the money that they've given you, if that makes sense. And you say, are you satisfied with your purchase?
Because they think they're spending this money that they've already given you.
Well, the idea is...
you've given their money back.
So as an example, I say, give me $2. You give me $2. And I give you a ping pong ball.
Yeah.
And I'm like, are you happy with your purchase? And everyone yells, yeah. And then you give them their $2 back. But
that's a terrible fundraiser.
And then you say, give me $5. Everybody gives you $5. And you give them all a tennis ball. And you say, are you happy with your purchase? Everybody goes, yeah. And then you give them their $5 back. And so you're training them that this is what happens. You give me money. I give you something. I say, are you happy with your purchase? I say, yeah. I give you your money back. And then I say, give me $100. And everybody gives me $100. And everyone gets a frying pan. I say, are you happy with your purchase? I say, yeah. And I say, thank you, good night. And then you leave with all the money. And the idea is that they've gotten all this stuff, right? They're surrounded with all these things that they've purchased throughout the night. But if they add up the total of everything they've gotten, right, it's not worth $100. Even the little, you know, if you add everything up, they haven't reached the amount of money that they've given you. So
but you've
come
also,
out ahead.
I don't know, man. You've also trained your audience to expect their money to come back to them.
Yeah.
Don't you think that they're going to be a little upset when, at the very end, their money does not come back? I mean,
well,
granted, it's a fundraiser and they're expecting to spend the money, so nobody's going to be rioting in the streets, but...
Well, the thing is that you got to understand is that in the original version of this, and I might be leaving some things out, who knows? But in the original thing... this was not a fundraiser. This is a way to scam people out of money, and you're already in your car driving out of town.
So even then, it's a way to scam people out of their money. And at the very end, when you say, "Are you happy with the purchase?" Yeah, goodbye. They're gonna be like, "Wait, what?"
Come back. Give
me my money back.
This is one of those things where, you have to remember that a lot of scams originated. Before the internet and all that kind of stuff, where getting the money from the person, that was it. You were pretty much done once you actually had the money. So you're training them to give you the money and then getting out of a way where they can't find you, right? Like nowadays, you can search for people, you can find them a lot easier and everything like that. But back in the day, if you were grifting small town people, you could, like, hop in your car and drive, and they wouldn't be able to find you, maybe.
One of the most successful and innovative fundraising techniques that I saw recently was an auction where when you raised your hand to bid on a cost, to bid on an item,
yeah.
you were promising to pay that amount of money regardless of whether or not you won the item. And so
this was
agreed upon amongst everybody. So it's not like a surprise, right? So
yeah.
We're going to start the bidding at $1. Who's going to bid $1? 10 people raise their hand. That's $10 automatically. Now who's going to give me $5? 5 people raise their hands. $25 more. And you just keep going and going and going. And so what would happen?
Let me ask you a question. If I raise my hand, right?
Yeah.
For the $1.
Yeah.
And then I raise my hand for the $5.
You are now paying $6. Regardless
$6.
Of whether or not. Yeah, regardless of whether or not you win. So what would happen is you would get like 2 or 3 people furiously trying to win this item because they are already so pot committed, right? To use a poker term.
It's based on the sunk cost fallacy. It's awesome.
Exactly.
Oh,
exactly.
My God.
And it worked really well. Because you're going to get somebody who has agreed to pay, you know, $250 for a something or other, but they don't get it. They don't get to go home with it.
But they still pay the $250.
They still pay the $250.
Now, see, again, this is one of those things of it's a fundraiser, so no one's really mad.
No, no. And
they know that they're going to pay that money.
Exactly. You have to set the ground rules to your audience right up front and be perfectly clear with them. And this was a fundraiser for a fringe theater, so everybody was there willing. And this is what I mean about making it easy for people to give money.
Yeah, you as the person going in there, right? Yeah. It should be like gambler rules. You have the amount that you want to pay. You know, that you say to yourself, like you budget yourself. You say, I'm going to pay $500 tonight.
Right.
And then you allow yourself to do that thing. And that's one of the things. You and I both know people who have like more money than you and I would ever be able to know what to do with.
Right.
And it's always this weird thing. They're not superheroes necessarily, but it is this weird thing of like you wonder how they decide how to spend their money and how would I use that power,
yeah,
if I had it. And I gotta say that most people that I know of this thing, you know, we talk about rich people and bad rich people and stuff like that.
Yeah.
Everyone that I know, well, at least that I know that I know, because, you know, there might be other people there, but everybody I know who does that, they're good. And I'm using good in the terms of like they actually, I mean, I've seen them fund projects that wouldn't have been made without their help and all that kind of stuff. Right. And it's great. Right.
Well, and you know, we know rich people who are circling the arts world.
Right. See, now that's actually part of it, probably. Yeah, yeah, yeah.
We don't know rich people who made their money through banking, who don't support theaters. We don't know rich people who,
of exclusionary clubs or whatever.
Yeah,
that kind of thing. Yeah, and I think that's good. That's a very good observation. That yeah, we know the right people,
the right rich people.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah, yeah, yeah. Lot of stuff about rich people in the news and things. You know, just the idea that one of the reasons why, because we always run into this where the left wing of the United States political thing tries to eat itself all the time.
Yeah.
And more people are noticing that it's that it comes down a lot to money. You know, there's the people who, like, everybody likes social causes and agrees that social stuff is good. And so where the battle lines get drawn is, you know, who's going to pay for stuff? Right. And as soon as people talk about taxing rich people a lot, like battle lines are drawn and all that kind of stuff.
Right.
It's really kind of interesting. And when I say kind of interesting, I mean annoying enough that I left Twitter again.
So I noticed.
Yeah, yeah, yeah. It wasn't just that. I have some friends who are not exactly new to Twitter, but a little bit more unfamiliar with it. And get roped into stuff that I was kind of over like 3 years ago. Like tagging a whole bunch of people. You're
such a Twitter hipster.
Yeah, I know, Ben. It's true. But tag five people in this joke. And then they do, and then people start having a conversation, and they don't untag you, and you just end up getting more and more posts in this thread full of people that you don't know about stuff that you don't necessarily... And that's when, you know, you can mute people and do all that kind of thing, but the more I'm like, what am I doing? Why am I doing this? And then I stop.
Yeah. Well, I mean...
It's funny, go ahead.
You seem to take the sort of nuke it from orbit and then terraform so you can live there again and then nuke it from orbit, as opposed to, like, you come and go, right?
Yeah.
you're away from Twitter, and then something, whatever it is, pulls you back, and you get really, really into it, and it really affects you. What I've found is the way that I approach Twitter is I just don't interact at all. I read it every once in a while, maybe twice a day I'll open up the app. And very rarely will I reply or even like a post. It happens sometimes, but pretty rarely. And I find that that's a unacceptable level of involvement.
I would say that, yeah, I try to do that. And then I always end up getting caught up in something. In my own fault, I know, but yeah. Honestly, the main reason I go on Twitter usually is to tell people that I like something they did.
Right.
And then when I'm there, something else will, you know, usually what happens is somebody will write to me because they notice that I'm back on. And then I'll get into a conversation, a good one, right? And then I'll keep reading, and then eventually I just get back into it.
I use Twitter mostly as a portal for information. I was on the bus.
That's good.
I was on the bus recently and going through downtown, and it was really weird. All of a sudden, like, the air conditioner on the bus turned off and everybody stopped talking at the same time. And so it went from this cacophony of voices and like white noise to just complete silence. And we heard the radio to the driver, and they were saying that, you know, there's an issue on the freeway, these routes, those routes, they have to take detours. And it sounded really serious, and like everybody's being super quiet. So I got on Twitter and I pulled up the WashDOT Twitter profile and found that there was a big accident on northbound I-5 right underneath the convention center, where there's like a rolled over car.
Oh, wow.
And
I know where that area is.
Yeah. That's right down the street from my house. Fortunately, there were no fatalities. In fact, the Twitter post said all of the occupants self-extricated.
Huh. Well, but, that's good, yeah.
Yeah, a good use of the Twitters, I find.
Yeah, yeah, yeah. I often, one of the reasons I would go on Twitter every once in a while was to see if something was down, a certain website or whatever. Because you look at it, and if within the past hour, like, 1,500 people are all talking about how the thing's down... that's how I learned that Tim Conway had died. And that was really, it was really weird because seriously, the day before, pretty much, or like 2 days before, or something like that, I was sitting, it was me and people my parents' age and some other people, and they we were all talking about how Tim Conway was great.
Yeah.
And then he died soon afterwards. And it was one of those things of like...
You made it happen.
Well, no. Like, what an influential guy he was.
Yeah.
The fact that we were talking about him just before he passed.
I haven't seen him in a long time. Like, I haven't seen him live in a long time. But I vaguely remember seeing a clip from an interview or something. From like Entertainment Tonight or TMZ or some Hollywood publication, and he wasn't doing too well in his final years. Like he may have had Alzheimer's or dementia, but he was staying out of the spotlight, and he wasn't like probably as sharp as I'm sure he wished he was.
Let's think of some people who did stay in the spotlight pretty much all the way up until the end. Spike Milligan, I believe, was pretty active.
Are we talking about people who have already died?
Okay. We don't have to. Who are you thinking?
I was thinking of William Shatner.
Oh, yeah. He's still doing stuff. Leonard Nimoy.
Leonard Nimoy, he did a music video right before he died that was really funny.
Oh, what was it about?
It was basically about just Leonard Nimoy being a dirty single old man.
Wow,
just living in a small town. Yeah, I'll see if I can find that video. I don't even remember what band it was for.
Huh. Oh, so it wasn't his song. It was somebody else's song.
No. Yeah, he was in a video for somebody's band.
Oh, and it wasn't Leonard Nimoy as a dirty old man living in a... I thought it was a song. I thought it was a song about how Leonard Nimoy is a dirty old man living in a small town.
No, but if you wanted to do one of those literal videos songs, that would be a good place for it.
Oh, man, I like it. Okay, so obviously David Bowie. He only died, he only lived, but I mean, I can't think of anyone else. He put out the album and then died, pretty much.
He knew he was dying as he was making the album, I believe.
Yeah. And it's great. It's still a very haunting album.
Yeah.
For sure. Again, it's one of these things, I believe David Bowie was also problematic. A lot of people are problematic, Ben. Problematic, like, maybe dated someone who was a teenager or hit somebody or maybe both. You know, that kind of thing. The reason I bring it up, however, is, did we talk about this, about R. Crumb?
We've not talked about R. Crumb, but, I'm familiar.
Okay, so R. Crumb, the cartoonist.
Yeah.
When I was on Twitter, there was a big brouhaha about him being problematic.
Yeah.
And, like, all these people like R. Crumb, but he's actually, you know...
he was
a racist guy and all this kind of stuff. And the thing that just struck me about this is that I grew up and I read R. Crumb comics and stuff like that. I don't think there was ever a time when I wasn't aware that he was problematic.
He was definitely, you know, in that underground comics, edgy style. I'm not familiar enough with his work to say that he was racist. He was definitely sexist.
Ben. I'm not going to say any of the stuff that he drew. I'm not going to describe it. But yes, there are definite things.
Well, I'm not going to doubt it's there. I'm just not familiar with it.
Yeah.
But what I am familiar with is his, you know, his images of sex and sexuality.
Right. Caricatures of both black people and Jewish people, things like that. The question, of course, becomes when you're discussing this, can you talk about it without espousing it? You know, that kind of thing. Can you draw a mean caricature of somebody but still like them? You know, all that weird stuff. And kids today have this thing, and I definitely don't dislike it. I actually think it's cool. Where they're like, I don't have to make that decision. I don't have to defend this guy. He did this thing. I don't like him. And you want to argue about whether or not it's cool or not, I don't care. Gone.
We've often had this discussion about, can you enjoy good art by bad people? Well, this sounds like the reverse of that. Can you enjoy bad art by good people?
Well, except he's not a good person either, really.
He's a very unique individual.
Yeah. That's what I would never put him in the good camp, I guess, is the thing. He's done some good things in his life, for sure. He's done some bad things in his life. He's a person, you know. And that's a real thing, I guess, is that I'm always very wary whenever we talk about good people and people being canceled and all that kind of stuff, that no one is all good.
Right.
There are bad things about people, about everybody. And the people that I tend to accept more are the people who wear their badness on their sleeve. And I think it's because I know where they stand. You know what I mean? I'm like, okay. So I can appreciate art by people who I would not be comfortable hanging out with. You know what I mean?
Yeah.
Now I hate to do this to you, Ben, but it's true. If I could think of one person who I hold up as the pinnacle of goodness, it would be my friend Ben Lawrence. And how much of it is simply because of things that you've done personally for me? That's really, I mean, talk about bribing the judge.
It's got to be all of it. Yeah.
Yeah, 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 yeah. But you know what I mean. I like you, Ben. And I don't feel bad about consuming any of your art.
Well, let's see how you feel about all this problematic art I'm about to release into the wild.
Oh, man.
It's only for you, man. It's dedicated to my friend Paul Goody. Here's some of the worst stuff you've ever seen.
Oh, Ben, and I'm serious about this. If you were to do that, I would be impressed by you on a different, not a different level. It would be an adjacent level. But I'd be impressed with you over here. I'd be like, holy crap. Because that's the thing, though. And we're moving
laterally.
Back me up on this. People were always impressed in our performances when you would transgress your persona. They were always very surprised.
Yeah.
And it was pretty cool. And it still is.
It's the long con because, you know, something's about to come out and it's better to have people think it's not you.
Hey, I gotta say, speaking about long cons, this mustache, I love it. I am gross. No longer frightening to anybody.
Well, that's what you think.
I'm just a pleasant person. And I love it. Because I've never meant to be frightening to people, but whenever I have the beard and the hair,
Do you think the beard is frightening? Do you think beards are frightening to other people?
Poverty is frightening to some people, and beards sometimes project poverty. People are afraid of poor people sometimes, Ben.
Yeah, but I would not. I wouldn't say beards in and of themselves are indicative of poor people. I would say maybe an unkempt, you know,
okay, well,
scraggly beard.
When I grew my beard out, it was unkempt and shaggy, mostly.
I think behavior is more, you know, beard with behavior is what turns people off. I don't see you, you know, acting like a mentally unfit person.
Yeah. Well, there was that one time, Ben.
I think mustaches are more. I think mustaches are more creepy than beards.
Oh no! Even big friendly mustaches. Oh, what am I gonna do?
Especially big friendly mustaches, because you know they're hiding something.
Oh boy! Oh boy! Well, I'll tell you. Here's the thing. I'm gonna share something with you that other people maybe won't know, but one of the reasons I had the mustache, Ben.
Yeah.
Is my hair always gets to an awkward phase when I'm trying to grow it out where it looks weird.
Yeah.
The mustache is masking that a little bit because the mustache is what looks weird right now. And the hair is part of it, but it takes the focus away from my hair. We'll see how that works out, but that's part of it.
Are you shaving every day to keep the mustache look, or are you...
No, I don't need to, because it's big enough that I can shave every 2 days or so. and it's still there. But I will say this, my parents gave me money for my birthday, and I spent that money on a new electric razor.
Oh.
Yes. So, and that should be arriving tomorrow.
The very last time I used an electric razor was, I was in college, and I was home for Christmas. And the day after Christmas, there was an ice storm, and we lost power. And power was out for more than a week. And I was trapped in Shelton, Washington at my parents' house. And all I had was an electric razor, but it had battery power, right? You know, you could charge it.
Oh, no.
And I'll admit this was my own fault. I decided to shave, and the battery was running out as I was shaving.
Yep.
And it got to the point, I don't think I threw it in the garbage, but it got to the point where I think I finally finished, and then I put it away, and I vowed never to use it again. And so it just hurt so much.
Yeah, because it would be pulling you.
It was just pulling the hair out. So ever since then, I've shaved with a shaving cream and a razor.
You basically turned your shaver into a facial epilady. Remember the epilady, Ben?
I remember commercials for it. I never personally used one.
Oh, yeah. At one point in time, I am not afraid to say, I was 21, and I started growing hair, more hair than I had before, and it was freaking me out, and so I got a home electrolysis kit.
Oh, geez.
The home electrolysis kit, Ben.
They sold those 20 years ago?
Yeah, and it consisted of a needle that you would stick into the pore, and then you'd zap the hair.
And I'm assuming that was painful?
Yeah, but that wasn't the reason I stopped. The reason I stopped was because it was so time-consuming.
Oh, yeah. You gotta hit every single pore.
Yeah, if you imagine how many pores you have, that's not gonna work. And I'm glad I didn't, because if I had, right now I'd have, like, maybe, if it actually worked, a small portion of my leg where no hair would grow, basically.
at least
I would have stopped.
Yeah, at least you started on your leg, and you didn't just, go straight for the face. It's like when you buy a carpet cleaner and they tell you to test it in a hidden spot.
Exactly. Right. But yeah. I would use Nair on my legs. The idea of having hair really freaked me out. So that was one of the reasons why I grew the beard out, was to fight through that whatever bizarre
face hair fears.
Phobia I had was.
Yeah.
But now that I'm, 46 years old, having a mustache is pretty fun. I gotta say.
It's a dad stash.
It is. It really is. And and Betty's cool with it. and the other thing is that I am, this is a personal thing. I am at the stage now where part of my beard is white and part of it is red.
Oh, yeah.
It's inconsistent. And it's not bad, except that because of the location of the white part, it looks like I've just finished drinking a milkshake and haven't wiped my chin. And enough people have mentioned that to me, like, hey, you've got something that I realize, okay,
yeah,
I'm going to wait until it all goes white, and then I should be fine.
Or you could do that thing where you buy some Just for Men.
No.
And comb it through
absolutely
your beard.
Not. No, I refuse. I'm so glad that I didn't fall into the Rogaine, if you're losing your hair, do this thing. Because, I have some spots that are balding.
Yeah.
But when you reach, and Ben, look forward to it, when you reach 46 years old, pretty much, you're like, you know what? I can stop worrying about a lot of this.
Right.
I've graduated into a new demographic on the advertising lists.
Pretty soon, you're not going to care at all. You're just going to walk outside in your tidy whities and your socks and slippers to pick up the newspaper.
Exactly. Now, the bad thing is a lot of people my age are doing much better financially than I am. So I don't have FU money at all.
Yeah.
But you don't need the money to have the attitude, I guess is what I'm saying.
Right.
You know,
good philosophy right there. Every time I go to get a haircut, I look at the clippings to see if I'm going gray. I think I am getting some gray hairs, but my hair is it's not black, but it's not blonde. It's, you know, dirty. I was dirty blonde, I felt, for a while, but now my hair's just brown, and you can't see light gray in my hair easily.
Yeah,
it doesn't really show up.
Got some in my temple right now.
Yeah.
In the temples.
Because I have some friends who have, like, really dark black hair, and when they get one gray hair, it's a beacon in the night.
Ping! Yeah, exactly. So, let's see. I've been watching Sneaky Pete on Amazon Prime.
Yeah.
Seasons 1 and 2 are great. Something has happened in season 3, and I don't know what it is.
Did they change showrunners?
They might have changed showrunners. I'm giving it the benefit of the doubt, but right now it's a little...
Did they run out of the source material books, and now they're just winging it?
Hey, speaking of that, the last episode of Game of Thrones is happening.
Yeah.
And get this, Ben...
What's that?
All that I know about Game of Thrones, I know about because it's been spoiled for me by people. Because Ben, I've embraced it. We live in a spoiler society. Nobody cares anymore. They cared at one point in time, and then now nobody does.
I will sort of disagree with that, because not with Game of Thrones specifically, but with Avengers Endgame. I didn't see.
Oh no!
I'm not. Don't worry. I'm not going to spoil anything. But I didn't.
No. Go ahead. But I didn't see. Say something after you.
I didn't see Endgame until about 2 weeks after it had been released. But I did not go on a social media sabbatical. I didn't stop reading Reddit. You know.
Yeah.
Reddit was very. Reddit was very good about marking something as a spoiler. And you know, I just didn't click on those links.
Well, this is the thing I will say. The difference is that Avengers Endgame, they did a huge push in their advertising not to spoil stuff. Like, they actually asked people not to do it.
Yeah.
And also, I can tell you this, Ben, I know a lot about Avengers Endgame. That I got from people, and not just social media, but people talking about it.
Yeah, like at
that
work?
Kind of thing. Yeah. Yeah, that's the big...
And you're not the kind of person to say, guys, I haven't seen it yet. Can you please not talk about it?
No, I've stopped doing that. Like I said, we live in a... I know that you are still, you know, existing in a happy land, but I found that it's better for me and my peace of mind just to accept it. I am the person who burns the house down rather than have it get struck by lightning.
So the thing about the final episode of Game of Thrones is that it's this Sunday. So yesterday, as this episode is being released, and boy, can you believe how it ended? No. The problem is this Sketchfest's annual fundraiser is also on Sunday.
Oh no.
And we just realized that, like, a week and a half ago. We've had this scheduled for like 6 months. And so I don't know if we knew that. Well, we obviously didn't know that it was going to fall on the final night of Game of Thrones.
Yeah.
So I'm hoping that people will not feel the need to watch Game of Thrones right at 6 p.m.
Wow.
And they'll come out and support Sketchfest.
You should probably actually...
Maybe our fundraiser is just watching the last episode.
Yeah, I'm going to say, you should totally do that. And say, okay, now look, you watch it on whatever device you want. This is the Wi-Fi password.
Right.
And just have everyone sitting with their phones watching it. Ben, I'm telling you, that would be great. Or here's the thing. Take a vote at the beginning. Hey, we've got this stuff. Or no, don't do that. No. Just send out. Yeah, you send out a release saying, "Hey, we just realized that we scheduled this at the same time. So instead of doing anything, come over here, support Sketchfest, and we'll all watch it together." I think that's great, Ben.
Yeah, when we're done, you know, we're going to have a... Actually, if we make our goal, then we'll watch the final episode right here on the big screen.
Oh, yeah, that's not bad.
And everybody gets that's free popcorn.
I like it. So, yeah, I'm really interested to see how it goes. The one... Have you been watching it, Ben?
Yeah, I'm all caught up.
Okay, so spoilers for Game of Thrones thing. It's funny who's mad at Daenerys's flip out.
So wait, so you're how much do you know? Because you just said you weren't watching it, but you know all these things.
Yeah. So
have your coworkers
Daenerys
just...
Targaryen obviously burns King's Landing.
So your coworkers just basically give you a point by point breakdown of the plot.
Well, once they started talking about it, I was like, okay, so... but I was on Twitter also during that time.
Yeah.
And, yeah, nobody cares.
All right, anymore. So go on. Danny burns down King's Landing.
Yeah. And people are like, this is a huge jump for her character and all that kind of stuff.
Yeah.
And they, you know, there was no foreshadowing, there was no forewarning, all that kind of stuff. And... the thing I would say is, as somebody who has watched it all the way up until this season, I was assuming that she was going to go nuts and burn stuff down at some point.
Right. I think the problem here is that we've spent, you know, 10 episodes per book.
Yeah.
And then when we get past that, it's everything's just been super condensed. And yes. Benioff and Weiss, basically, they're trying to squeeze what, you know, I mean, granted that George R. R. Martin's going to go in a different, you know, he's going to go in a different direction, maybe. But they're trying to squeeze what would probably be 2 to 3 books worth of material into 13 episodes. And so a lot of stuff is happening and it's just feeling really unmotivated. Because you're not, because in the first 4 seasons, you had a chance to really, like, these characters had a chance to just marinate in their decisions, right?
Yeah.
They're
and
passing.
I haven't seen it also. So, you know, the way that, if you just say plot points to me, right?
Yeah.
I can imagine in my head how it would look and how it would be good.
Yeah.
And maybe that isn't what happens. You know what I mean?
But it's, but I think that's the problem, you know, because there's one thing that's happening where you don't buy it. I don't buy it.
What? Which is what?
It's how. Jon Snow and Daenerys get together, right? And he is totally devoted to her. He keeps saying she is my queen, like over and over. He bent the knee to her. He will do whatever she says.
Yeah.
That all happened in the course of like one episode, right? Where, you know, he's just like, I don't know who this person is, to, you are the love of my life. I will do whatever you want.
Okay.
Just one of those things where in previous, you know, previous seasons, something like that, like his romance with Ygritte.
Yeah.
In the Wildling. You know, that was, you know, you bought that because they you know, they had time to develop that relationship.
Gotcha.
Enough time, though, Kit Harington actually married that actress.
What?
Yeah, Kit Harington and the actress who plays Ygritte, I don't know her real name, they got married.
Oh, well, that's nice for them. I think. Probably.
So, we can get off the Game of Thrones thing, and I believe we have some corrections this week.
Oh, hey, corrections. All right. As Ben has noted, we talk about this every episode, but we'll just talk about it for really quick. We don't look stuff up before or during or, well, sometimes after, but usually not after the show. Because of an observation made early on in the series that people think they know stuff, but they really don't. They just know how to look stuff up. It's two different things. So we try to go through the whole hour without looking anything up and just using our brains, which sometimes works and sometimes does not work at all. Whenever we get something wrong or if something needs a little bit of embellishment, we do a little thing that we like to call corrections.
Ding.
And these corrections, I believe, come from Jennifer Fact Checker, my lovely wife. And Ben, what are we looking at?
Well, we were talking about the phrase relative safety of the alley below. And yes. I said I seem to remember Jose at one point claiming that he started that.
Yes.
And I think this was in like a Facebook post or something. Jennifer says, I don't know who it was who started the relative safety of the alley below thing, but my money's on McCandless. McCandless was around, but Jose just wasn't until well after that phrase became canon. AJ Epstein, maybe? I'm going to take issue with that. I think Jose's been around longer than we think.
I think that's possible.
Jose's been around. I think Jose has been around Annex longer than me because he was in a sketch group that performed there.
He was in what? I'm sorry?
He was in a sketch group that performed in Seattle long before I became a part of the scene here.
What was the name of the sketch group?
Disgruntled Bit Players was the sketch group.
Oh yeah.
So maybe deserves some more looking into.
And the big thing also is that you were there before I was there, so I have absolutely no frame of reference. But I don't know when Jennifer got there. Jennifer got there. Yeah. Before me, for sure.
Number two. This is a long one, and I don't remember what we were talking about, so I'm just going to read it. The fear of some to go to East Germany had more to do with being arrested by the Stasi. You could be held indefinitely, tried without counsel, or just disappear. People would take jeans to Eastern Europe and sell them for exorbitant amounts of money or for rides, food, lodging. Illegal, yes. The bank would charge huge fees for changing money, so folks would change money with citizens. Also illegal. These things were common ways to make your way around Eastern Europe cheaply, and many people didn't return from their trips. Many military families were not allowed to travel to Eastern Europe lest they get held by the Stasi or KGB for extortion of military information. Even pretty low-level information, names of post or base COs, what's available at the PX or commissary, who goes to which American high school, weird publicly available information. My mom and grandma were allowed to go to Poland and Russia, but we, the kids, were not.
Ooh.
So I guess we were talking, I don't remember what we were talking about.
We were talking about East Germany, about how... It was a dangerous thing at the time, thought to be. And what Jennifer is saying here is it was.
Indeed. I don't think we were debating whether or not it was dangerous.
I was unsure.
Number three, we were talking about the Georgia anti-abortion bill.
Yes.
Which, surprisingly enough, the Alabama anti-abortion bill, which is more extreme than the Georgia one, was just signed into law by Alabama's female governor. Go figure that one out.
Here's a scary thought. They say it's punishable by 99 years in prison, if I remember correctly, the Alabama one.
I don't know the number.
What's the statute of limitations? Like,
so if you got an abortion before this law was put into place, you're going to go to prison? Yeah. I don't think that's how laws work.
That's the question. Okay, good.
All right. Number three, the Georgia law is unenforceable and unconstitutional. The Interstate Commerce Act prevents it from being viable, so it's not going to last long. The common exceptions for rape, incest are not addressed, but health of the mother is. I can speak further on this if you want. Keep your eye on the Interstate Commerce Act and jurisdictional jurisprudence.
Okay, well, that's something. For sure.
One of the things,
and I know that the ACLU is putting out stuff talking about how abortions are still legal, in Georgia right now. Yeah, you know, and how long it takes for the law to take effect, and how they're going to try to stop it from taking effect, and all that kind of stuff.
So the ACLU and Planned Parenthood have already launched lawsuits in Alabama. The thing about the Alabama law is that the purpose of such an extreme law, and it has no, like Jennifer said, the Alabama law has no exceptions for rape or incest. Only if the mother's health is in danger will they allow it. They want that to go to the Supreme Court because they think there are enough conservative judges on the Supreme Court these days to overturn Roe v. Wade. That's the ultimate end goal here, is to make it federally illegal.
Yeah. If I can just say one thing about all of this, I have seen people debating or whatever saying that this is the fault of people who protest voted in 2016 and now talked about this before. And the idea is that this law, this Alabama law, wouldn't have been stopped by whoever was president. The thing that will, again, if the people are, if the folks are future tripping on the idea that Trump being in the White House has now made us have conservative justices, and then therefore, if this goes up to the Supreme Court, then they could overturn Roe v. Wade. That is all true.
Yeah.
This law specifically, things, well, this is, I guess the point I always want to get back to making is that the people that suck now would have also sucked in this alternate universe. It's just that, there would have been more people fighting them at higher levels of government.
I think there's also something to be said, and here I'm going to put on my Paul Goody conspiracy hat. One of the things, I think one of the reasons why we're seeing a lot of anti-abortion bills is because it is a hot button topic for single issue voters. And yes. I think the current White House administration and the Republican Party as a whole are seeing that they are losing support even amongst their base. And so this is a way to regain that support. So it's a distraction from the administration's losing support from their base. It's a distraction, I think, from the oncoming war with Iran that might be happening.
Oh, that's great.
So yes,
I haven't heard of that.
Oh yeah, fun stuff. If you had a Democratic president in the White House, I think that maybe we won't see such draconian anti-abortion bills. We would still see them, but we wouldn't see them all at once, like all right now. You know, how come these bills weren't written 2 years ago, when Trump still had large Republican support? So the other thing I've seen, going back to your the people who are blaming third candidate voters for this, is I've already seen Democrats blame Bernie and Jill Stein supporters for everything that's happening.
Yeah.
Like, none of this would have happened if people just didn't vote for Bernie or Jill Stein.
That constantly was a thing. And again, I have to note that Bernie wasn't running in the general. And so a lot of the
there's that ongoing bad taste in the mouth of Hillary supporters that everybody who supported Bernie didn't vote for Hillary.
Which is untrue.
Exactly. Well, I mean, you and I know that.
Right. Yes. Absolutely, anyway, we know that.
So that's it for corrections for this week.
Wait, but the big thing is that we as a society are still in a bad place.
Yeah.
One might argue that now we know that we're in a bad place. And if we had talked to more disenfranchised people, they would have noted that we were already in a bad place. We just didn't notice it. And so, now that it's affecting our lives, now all of a sudden, you know, we care, all that kind of thing. I don't want to be depressed about it.
Well, one bright light that I am finding in this dark black hole we call American society these days is that Ash vs. Evil Dead Season 3 is now on Netflix, which I've really been enjoying.
Hey, I haven't seen it.
You should watch Ash vs. Evil Dead.
Oh, it is Tick Season 2 also on Amazon Prime.
Yeah. It is all on the Netflix, or if you get Amazon Prime, if it's on there. I didn't know that part, but.
Tick Season 2.
It's glorious, gory fun, and apparently Ash versus Evil Dead. And if you love you some Bruce Campbell, it is peak Bruce Campbell, and sadly, it is the last Bruce Campbell playing Ash. After Starz canceled the show at the end of season 3, Bruce Campbell, he hung up the chainsaw.
Oh man. Well, I'm going to have to take a look at that. The other good thing, Jeff Bezos wants to move everybody into space. where there are no labor laws. I'm kidding. Hey everybody, how's it going? Woo. But yeah, don't go to space. Just in general. Speaking of, you're not going to space. Hey, Betty!
Oh, God. Hey, we didn't have battery check earlier, but battery check.
We're doing all right.
All right.
Yo!
Hey, Betty.
Because I'm not recording your track this today, so...
Okay, we're doing good.
There's no fail-safe.
So, Betty, lying face down on the bed wearing a t-shirt... that my biological dad made. Hey, Betty, what's going on?
Nothing really.
Hey, did you see that YouTube doody doody doo thing that I sent you?
Yeah, I've seen it many times.
Do you remember who did that?
I did.
Yes, indeed, you did. Ben, I'm going to send you a link to this thing that Betty made.
I was like 5, so don't judge me.
Yeah, that's true.
You know, thank God the internet wasn't around when I was 5. Good Lord.
So I believe what happened was that I drew a thing, and then there was a program that allowed you to animate something like it was a puppet, basically.
Yeah.
And so Betty was playing with the puppet animate-y thing, and it was pretty cool. I wonder if that program still exists, because that would be a fun thing for you to... mess around with, Betty. I think.
Is this an app on a phone?
Yeah. Well, it was on a iPad, but yeah.
Yeah, same thing.
I'm sure iOS. They have a version of it on the phone. For real. So, Betty, what's new? What's up?
Well, I've been watching more Gotham.
Oh, yeah.
Spoilers for Gotham, by the way. And
right now the spoilers were that you've been watching it. Oh, okay. Spoilers for Gotham coming up.
And spoilers. I watched the scene where Kristen died. And it destroyed me.
Kristen Kringle, who is somewhat girlfriend of Ed Nygma, also known as the Riddler.
Right.
Spoiler alert, he kills her.
Oh.
Yeah.
That wasn't very nice.
He accidentally strangles her to death, but not really accidentally, but kind of.
Yeah, it's... How do you do that, Ben? How do you kind of accidentally strangle someone?
Let me count the ways.
What, one? Face?
Two. Kind of. Three.
Oh, wait,
four.
Two? What's... There's oh, four. No. And with that...
also, by the way, I saw the scene where Ed and Oswald actually meet. Like, at first it was the... It was like, why are you talking to me? But this time they actually met. And I was like, this is where it starts.
Oh, hey, Betty, can I tell you something?
What?
Did you know that the state that I live in and the state that Ben live in both are going to go Democratic in the next election, probably 100%? And there's nothing anybody can do about it?
I don't care.
And that, Ben, is why we're losing the youth vote.
And with that, it's probably time to say goodbye.
Yeah. Hey, everybody. It's still vote. Vote your conscience.
One last thing. It's a good thing the youth can't vote.
Oh, yeah. Wait, why?
Because we've lost it already. Maybe we'll get it back when they can vote.
Well, yeah, we'll see. We'll see how
Betty's,
it goes.
Betty's got a few years, so, you know, just,
Hey, Betty, vote, okay?
Vote early, vote often.
Yeah, vote as many times as you can, Betty. Okay. For the good person. Okay.
All right, sorry, Paul. Ben,
I don't know what's happening.
I don't either.
Betty's just staring at me, everybody. It's too hot is what's happening. It's very hot in our house.
Gotcha.
Aw.
Well, turn the fan on, and I will talk to you next week.
All right, Ben. And, hey, you keep it wrong. Also.
As always, keep it wrong.
Oh, yes.
All right. Talk to you later.